You're listening to Civic Media. You can tune into any of our live shows on any radio station across the state with the Civic Media app. Find us in your phone's app store and listen anytime, anywhere.
Live across Wisconsin on Civic Media, you're listening to Mornings with Pat Kreitlow, powered by Up North News. Now, from our Lake Wissota studio, here is the founding editor of Up North News, Pat Kreitlow.
Good morning. Welcome back. It's 8:06. Nice to have you here up north on this Wednesday, July 16th, 2025. Our producer, Parker Olson, is standing by down in Madison, Studio A2. We'll be talking to Earl Ingram in just a sec. We'll have State Democratic Party Chair Devin Remiker joining us later this hour. But first, we finally get to visit with meteorologist Brittany Merlot to talk about a forecast that is, dark and stormy, I guess, is going to be the theme again today, huh?
Yes, it is. And that's going to be spreading throughout the entire state. So yesterday, quite a night up north, right? Flash flooding in Ashland, Webb Lake, Lampson. 5 inches of rain fell there in Solon Springs. So a good 1 to 3 widespread up there. Now that heavy rain is going to be moving through the rest of the state. I think widespread statewide, expect at least a half an inch. You could get near an inch. And the more storms that you keep getting under, you're going to be closer to 2 to 4 inches. Yeah, a lot of rain. So we've got a flood watch out for Wausau to Green Bay, all the way through the Fox Valley to Oshkosh and over to Wisconsin Rapids. That's where it looks like the heaviest hit of rainfall will hit. So flash flooding, definitely a risk as we go through this afternoon. And also high winds and tornadoes could be with these storms too. So a slight risk for areas from Wisconsin Rapids to Green Bay and everyone south, including Madison, including Milwaukee, everyone else. There is a marginal risk from Wausau to La Crosse, and up north we're looking at normal storms. You should get a little bit of relief, but still it's going to bring at least a half an inch to an inch of rainfall. So still flooding risks up north ongoing, and this low pressure system is going to be swirling through the state today. Upper 50s up north, that's going to be the highs, to upper 80s down south. So a 30 degree spread across the state, you know these storms are going to pack a punch when you have such a big temperature difference. That's what happens. So rain will start spreading in. It already is in northwest Wisconsin and far western areas right now. It's going to be moving in towards central areas, probably around noon or so to 2 o'clock. Madison, north central areas, you'll probably be getting those storms around 2. And then it moves into the Fox Valley, Milwaukee, and into the northeast, Northwoods, probably around 4 to 5 o'clock or so. It should wind down late tonight, around 9 to 10. Overnight, scattered showers and storms will continue, but those shouldn't be strong or severe, so you can go to sleep and not worry about it. And then by tomorrow, it will be clouds clearing, significantly cooler, highs only in the low to mid 70s statewide. It's going to be refreshing.
Very refreshing compared to what we went through yesterday. That was that was searing heat that we had at the time. So
you walk outside, you just start dripping sweat. That's what I was doing.
I am not a bit surprised that the storms are a little strong coming in because it's breaking up some serious heat out here. So Brittany, thank you so much. Appreciate it. Have a great day.
You too.
Tomorrow on the program, we will be talking to State Senator Jeff Smith about the oops in the state budget, maybe you could call it, where Republicans maybe forgot to fund a homeless program for veterans, and whether a bill to follow up on it will fare better than the amendment Senator Smith and others were circulating during the voting on the state budget to say, guys, you forgot something here. But for now, there's a lot of people anxious and upset about this thing that Governor Evers wanted to continue funding that Republicans cut down to zero. So we'll talk to Senator Smith about that. And Corrine Hendrickson, a child care provider from the New Glarus area, talks to us about the personal impact to her because of what was and what was not in the state budget. So that's all coming up tomorrow. But right now, let's talk to Civic Media's Earl Ingram, who's got a new podcast as well, and we'll talk about some of what's in his latest edition of the podcast in just a moment. But first, Earl, good morning. How are you doing today?
I'm doing fine. How are you, Pat?
I'm doing great, thanks. I wanted to thank you for calling my attention to a new public museum that's going up, going to be called the Nature and Culture Museum. downtown to replace the Milwaukee Public Museum. But they had this ceremony yesterday, the topping off ceremony, where it's like a steel beam goes at the very top of the building. All the dignitaries there and the crew, they sign the beam, and then it's lifted by a crane to the very top of the building. And I'm looking at the footage from Channel 12, and it fell out of the hoist as it was being brought up. Now, nobody got hurt. They quickly put it back in the hoist, and they put it in place. But that was some scary-looking video for what hopefully is a great new museum. But that's not exactly the way you plan a ceremony like that, Earl, is it?
Well, the ceremony, notwithstanding, Pat, I will tell you that the old museum was 140 years old. Mm-hmm. And I can tell you, as a young child going through the museum, it had everything in it. It was one of the top museums in the nation for many years, but 140 years old is pretty old for any building, let alone a museum. And so they decided to build this new one, and the cost of it is a fraction of what you think cost should be for something like this. It's $240 million. Contrast that to the Pfizer Forum, where the Bucks play, which was built about 7-8 years ago for $540 million. And you kind of see they've had to downsize what they'll be able to show. It was a big fight about it, and as I drive past it and see the size of it, it really is probably about a fifth of the size of the old museum. But the architecture of it will set it, along the top architectures of any building in this country. It's going to be, they'll talk about it like they talk about the art museum in downtown Milwaukee. That's how beautiful this design is, and I can't wait to get a chance to get into that museum in 2027.
Yeah, so when they expect that, construction will finish on there for the new Nature and Culture Museum, and I know according to one news report saying, well, why can't they just call it the new Milwaukee Public Museum? Well, you can't, because it's not all public dollars that are going into it. It's a separate 501c3, and they don't want to confuse people. But again, it almost certainly will have the best of the Milwaukee Public Museum. And I guess what some things, if it's smaller, we'll just have to rotate in. And look, if that keeps your museum from getting stale, I'm all for that, because there are some museums that I've certainly seen over the years, and it's like they don't either they seem to hardly ever change, or they change so slowly that, the museum itself becomes a museum relic. So I rather like that they're going to have this new canvas to build on. And I think it's going to be a real boon for Milwaukee.
Well, it looks like it looks like four beehives, mm-hmm, together on the outside. So, I mean, it's a very beautiful building.
Yeah, that's going to be really nice right there on North 6th Street, 6th and McKinley, which I wasn't going to mention this, but as soon as I said 6th Street, it reminded me of how the Trump bill that passed is getting rid of a whole bunch of money that was going to help out with that 6th Street corridor. And anybody that has driven downtown Milwaukee, knows the importance of having corridors that are safe and accessible, but also encourage commerce. And look, I'm not saying that it's going to be some kind of a fatal blow to downtown Milwaukee, but that was a nasty and unforced error on the part of Congress getting rid of that 6th Street funding.
Well, it certainly is nothing new, and I think people will say that across this nation, because it's happening all over this nation, and people need to be aware of what's taking place. It's one thing to see it on television and hear talk about it, but the tentacles are now starting to reach your neighborhoods and your community, and now you see the impact of what's taking place there.
Yeah, without a doubt. Earl's got a podcast series for us called What's Going On, and the latest edition of it is out. It's part one of a series that's called Is Your Water Safe? And you sat down with lead-free water activist Paul Schwartz. Can you tell us a bit more about what you guys discussed?
Well, I can tell you that Get the Lead Out is going to be a national podcast. We have the top scientists from across the entire world that we are going to be interviewing in an ongoing conversation about people and water and in this nation, educating people on what's taking place in any building that was built prior to 1975. It's pretty safe to say that the pipes in those buildings contain lead. And so what we're trying to do is educate and make people aware of the inherent dangers of what is taking place in their cities all across this nation. It is not solely an issue in Flint, Michigan, and Milwaukee and other places. It's all over this nation. And the fact that we have a government that refuses to educate people totally on the inherent problems with lead because they don't want to get stuck with the liability of all the damage that has happened. And the fact that they continue to produce lead piping today. And so that's going to be a national podcast that we are going to do many segments. Paul Schwartz is one of the founders of Get the Lead Out along with Dr. Yana Lambert-Lambertini-Du. And so we're going to have the best scientists again across the world in conversations explaining exactly what this is.
And I'm really glad that you again emphasize that this is not just a Milwaukee or Flint problem, because we talked, was it last week or the week before, with Representative Angela Stroud from up in the Ashland Bayfield Superior region, and helped work out a deal for removing a lot of lead water lines in Superior. And the original Republican proposal was basically going to take the private water utility off the hook and, you know, stick taxpayers, you know, property owners with the entire bill. And goodness knows we're seeing, you know, either hostility or disdain from the legislature toward the Milwaukee project. And so if we've learned anything from what just happened in Superior, it's that you got to be paying attention full time to make sure that A, they stick to the goal of removing these lead lines, and B, that the costs are shared equitably.
Well, again, what we're looking to do is educate the entire nation that this is the fact that they're continuing to make lead plumbing, knowing the impacts of lead, and the fact that they continue to mine lead in the face of all the damage that it's doing to human beings is what we want to do. We want to make sure that people get outraged enough to know that their children's futures are at stake. And we have a nation that hasn't been forthright and truthful with the impact of what's happening with lead. And so if nothing else, the whole purpose of Get the Lead Out, the campaign that is we're hoping to go totally national with, is to bring pressure necessary to elected officials who are in a position to get this thing rectified.
Yeah, and again, getting the lead out should be a bipartisan thing. It should not be this hard. To learn more about it, listen to What's Going On with Earl Ingram, a podcast that you can catch over at civicmedia.us/shows, or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. Earl, thank you so much as always. Hope you have a great day.
You as well.
All right, thank you. A local break is coming up next for some of you, and others we will visit with Melissa Baldoff, and we will get this week's climate check coming up. Bit of a change of tone from Donald Trump when it comes to FEMA. That and much more still ahead. And then State Democratic Party Chair Devin Remicker when we're all back together in 15 minutes here on the Civic Media Radio Network. I'm Pat Wrightlaw.
You're listening to Civic Media. Stay up to date on the latest news and information for your local community and Wisconsin by signing up for our free email newsletter. Visit civicmedia.us/email to get started.
Welcome to our Climate Check segment this week. We're going to be talking about how you can get some of those clean energy tax credits before they run out. We'll also discuss whether there's a climate law in New York City that might have some impact on the mayor's race there. But we're going to start with a change of tone from the President of the United States on FEMA, promising to dismantle it until he saw that it actually does do things when disaster strikes. And those disasters, sadly, are striking with more frequency because of a changing climate. Melissa Baldoff, how are you?
I'm doing well, thanks. How about you?
Well, I'm doing all right. Obviously, you know, our hearts still go out for the people in Texas. But, you know, even as we want them to get all the help they need, I can't help but mention that, you know, federal aid has not come from the Trump administration to California yet from all the wildfires that we're kind of picking and choosing here. And here's a president who, you know, initially said he was going to shut down the Federal Emergency Management Agency. Now he says that FEMA is going to be fixed up in no time. You really don't know what's going to come out of his mouth next, do you?
No, except that, you know, it's going to be a bunch of crap. is the only thing you can count on, that it's, you know, likely not true. This crisis, just absolutely, you know, underscores why we need FEMA and why we need it to be effective, why we needed to have the support, the full support of the president of the White House. And, you know, that's, I think, going to continue to be a challenge for this administration when they, from, you know, just about day one, have been talking about, you know, making this agency, you know, quote, go away, Trump said, and Kristi Noem, point blank in a cabinet meeting earlier this year, said, we are going to eliminate FEMA. So, you know, they have had a target on this agency for months and months. And like everything else in our federal government, they have wanted to, you know, starve it of resources, render it useless, essentially. And then now that there's a great need for this agency, for the expertise of the professionals that have dedicated, you know, their careers to this work, you know, now it's, oh, well, only I can fix it, just like everything else. Well, I'm just going to fix FEMA, and there we're going to get it going. And, you know, maybe it makes a good soundbite here and there, but that doesn't actually help the people in Texas. It certainly doesn't help the people in California who are still waiting for relief. And it's not going to help the next communities that need help too.
Right. And again, look, whatever your stance on a changing climate, whether you're with the scientists or not, having a working disaster agency seems to be one of the, we shouldn't even be having this discussion. And yet here we are again, with the Trump administration trying to get rid of some of these clean energy tax breaks. Melissa, I know there's a New York Times story that was asking how to get some of these thousands of dollars in credits before they go away. Are there indications that the credits are still out there to get for things like EVs or, I don't know, maybe, you know, solar up on your roof or other home upgrades?
There are still options, and you know, this is a great piece on the Times. Also, I would encourage folks to head over to forwardtogetherwi.org to check out a blog post that is up over there about this very same topic. You know, the bad news is that the reconciliation bill is absolutely going to gut clean energy credits that are helping folks in Wisconsin, you know, helping people save money on their energy bills at home, creating jobs and opportunity. You know, we know this legislation will lead to an energy shortage. It's going to make our utility costs get higher, make us more dependent on foreign oil, you know, all the bad things and the pollution of it all. But there is the good news that there is time still to take advantage of some of these credits. So people absolutely should be looking into what is still possible for them. And one thing I really want to touch on is they mentioned in this New York Times article about the home energy upgrades and, you know, those credits phasing out. But the really great news for people in Wisconsin is that we are one of, you know, a handful of states that were able to get our programs up and running very fast. In fact, Wisconsin was the first state in the nation to be able to launch our home energy rebate programs and doing those, administering those incredibly well. And that money is already with the state with Focus on Energy. So that program's not going to go away for us until the money runs out. So people who are interested in pursuing a home energy efficiency project in Wisconsin, you know, we've got more time than a lot of other folks because that money is going to be there until it's gone. It's been allocated. So, you know, people who are interested in, you know, checking out an electric heat pump or heat pump water heater, if they want to look into, you know, doing some insulation or other weatherization work that will help them save money on their utility bills, those programs are available and people should go to Focus on Energy and check that out and check out the eligibility and find out how they can move that forward if they're still interested. But for anyone who is interested, you know, time is of the essence. Same thing for, you know, any local governments, schools, nonprofits, places of worship, entities that have been newly eligible for direct pay to be able to install wind and solar, geothermal, battery storage. You know, those kinds of projects are going to be eligible for a tax credit as long as they're started by July 4th of next year. All right. You know, for folks doing, you know, some bigger work, they still have time too. So check out the blog post at forwardtogetherwi.org. You can learn a little bit more about how you can access that funding if that's something of interest.
All right. Melissa Baldoff, thank you so much. Appreciate it. Have a great day.
Thanks, you too.
We'll be back with State Democratic Chair Devin Remaker after this. You're up north. Tomorrow, we will be talking to State Senator Jeff Smith about the state budget bill, especially the item that was missing from it, the one that would have funded homeless veterans programs here in Chippewa Falls and elsewhere, and whether anything can be done to save this before closures have to take place. We'll also talk to Corrine Hendrickson, a child care provider from New Glarus, on what was in the budget, what was not in the state budget, and the impact it's going to have on her and her future plans. That was the state budget. There was also the federal budget reconciliation bill that passed recently, which is going to do tremendous damage to families and others in Wisconsin. A lot of people would like to tell their Congressman Derek Van Orden about it in Western Wisconsin's 3rd Congressional District. We can't seem to rip him away from his Twitter machine long enough, whereas I'm looking at his recent feed, and by the way, the unofficial motto of this show is we read Twitter so that you don't have to. Yep, still just slinging insults at everybody and misleading on the bill. But if folks in the 3rd District would like to sound off about it, there will be a town hall in the La Crosse area this evening. And here to tell us more about it and all of his other new job duties is the new state chair of the Democratic Party of Wisconsin, Devin Remaker. Devin, good morning. How are you?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me on, Pat. Appreciate it.
Well, yeah, and belated congratulations as well on your election at the state convention, succeeding Ben Wickler. What's your take on, I don't think the orientation was that tough given your prior experience with the party.
You know, my pitch was ready on day one, given my 7 years of working at the state party with both Chair Wickler and Chair Lanning. And I think I was ready on day negative 14. I started right after the convention, dove right in to get ready for that July 1 official date. We've been up to a ton. And the first thing on our docket for a big public event is this town hall this evening in La Crosse, holding Derek Van Orden accountable for the awful bill he voted for.
Right. And this is far and away not just a solo affair with the new state party chair. There's going to be a lot of folks who are going to be showing up there who represent the area, and I would argue represent the area better than Congressman Van Orden does, who have been watching the harm that this bill is going to do, and they're going to be talking about that tonight as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, you know, Senator Path and Representative Johnson, I'm also going to be joined by La Crosse County Democratic Party Chair William Garcia to talk a little bit about, you know, the impact from the state. But really what happened and the reason we're holding this town hall is that Derek Van Orden has simply refused to engage with his constituents. I believe he tweeted 75 times over the weekend. He has been burning up the Twitter machine. I saw him tweeting at around 12:30 a.m. Today that he wanted to be placed in Trump's hero garden, whatever that is. And I mean, that's, you know, ultimately what happened here is he voted for a bill that is going to take away health care. It's going to take away SNAP. It could potentially close a hospital in his district. One of the hospitals in his district was on the chopping block from this bill, and he is simply hiding. It's cowardly, and we want to make sure that folks have a chance to tell people how they feel and share the impact that this bill has had and will have on their lives.
The impact on the 3rd Congressional District, I mean, is not small. There's people that think, well, this is just a sliver of the population. We're talking tens of thousands of people in the 3rd Congressional District alone impacted either by Medicaid or by SNAP, nutritional benefits, things like that, right?
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, we're looking at 30,000 people. I mean, think about that. That is a pretty big city in the state of Wisconsin losing their health care, potentially losing their access to food, potentially, on top of all the other knock-on effects. And I mean, really what we have is this is all being done in service of enriching the already wealthiest people in this country. I mean, really, this is just a gut punch to the working class in this state. And Derek Van Orden not only supported it, but celebrated it. He cheered the loss of healthcare and food access for the folks in his district. And I think, you know, voters deserve a chance to be able to share how they feel about that, both now and hopefully next year when they vote him out of office.
Well, and on top of all of that was the kerfuffle from, the state budget passing and the congressman being a bit, shall we say, I don't know, either misleading or talking out both sides of his mouth in terms of, you know, supporting something and yet trying to warn Governor Evers at the same time about what was coming, you know, from this bill. What was it that was in this bill that, you know, Derek Van Orden thought he wanted to warn the governor about and yet supported it anyway?
You know, they really started a fire and then offered to help put it out. I mean, Derek Van Orden is, I'll cut through it. He's lying. He's lying to his constituents. Ultimately, he sent a letter urging the governor to make some changes and sign the budget that would, you know, help ensure Medicaid access in this state. When he's the one and his party's the one who's put it in danger in the first place, not to mention the fact that Republicans in the state of Wisconsin for years have refused to expand Medicaid and bring our taxpayer dollars back to this state to help more people have health care. And I think that, you know, that sort of I think misleading is a generous term for what to me seems like a pretty knowing lie to the voters in Wisconsin. And I think that he is taking voters for granted. I think they can see through it, and we're going to make sure that they know what the facts are.
Although now to do that is what leads us to events like tonight's in La Crosse and beyond, because, I mean, it almost goes without saying that the Republican strategy for 2026 will be to, what, create distractions, anything, and count on other people to stop talking about the impact of this bill. But I can just say from a radio host standpoint, much less anybody involved in politics, there does not appear to be a shortage of people who want to come forward and talk about the importance of these programs that their tax dollars paid for.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that tonight, you know, we're going to hear the truth that people are scared of what's coming. We've already heard Medicaid recipients whose caseworkers have called them and told them that their health care may be reduced or cut because of this bill. So although, you know, we're looking forward to the opportunity to be able to tell this story, it's really important to remember that these are real people that are being impacted already. And even if they haven't had the benefit cut, just knowing that that's hanging over your head, knowing that you might have to worry about where you or your family is going to get health care or your next meal from, that's something that no person deserves in this state. And unfortunately, Derek Van Orden and his Republican colleagues in Wisconsin are the ones that have enabled this situation.
Now, is this town hall something that people can still register for at this point? And if so, how do they go about doing that?
Yeah, absolutely. You can just go to mobilize.us, search in La Crosse, should pop up right away. If you just sign up there, no cost of admission, feel free to come on down. It'll be at the Pump House Performing Arts Center in beautiful downtown La Crosse.
All right. So people can gather there and, again, share their stories and, you know, again, look for some kind of alternative, shall we say, to Derek Van Orden. I mean, there are certainly three candidates involved in the race right now who would like to replace him. And that really says something, doesn't it? That, I mean, three people have already come forward to challenge Van Orden in the 3rd District?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think that he has really, really, you know, made a mess of his representation of that part of the district. I worked for Congressman Ron Kind for 4 years. And, you know, I saw somebody that held listening sessions in every county, in every part of the district, every single year to make sure that he was consistently hearing from folks, incorporated into how he represented people. And Derek Van Orden is just more interested in playing Washington, D.C. political games and trying to score points on Twitter with Elon Musk and Donald Trump than he is representing the people of Wisconsin.
Now, the Wisconsin Supreme Court recently turned down a request to look at the congressional maps, which is, you know, not to say that that's the, you know, the complete end of the subject. There's another lawsuit that's out there pending. But I bring it up because, again, we're stuck with the lines that are there. They are certainly gerrymandered compared to what they were, you know, more than a decade earlier. But for folks that have seen Derek Van Orden win 2 times already, even if we keep these same maps in place, how winnable is the 3rd District for a Democratic candidate?
Well, I think it's incredibly winnable. And I mean, we even saw that the candidate last year was able to outperform the top of the ticket. And I think that, you know, we, especially in these midterm elections, the electorate is a little different than we've had in presidential years. And I think it's an electorate that's more favorable to Democratic candidates, especially in the 3rd congressional district. And I mean, I think that this bill counts for a lot. I mean, you know, part of what we are working on at the Democratic Party of Wisconsin through year-round organizing, but also expanding into our 72-county strategy is going to be making sure that we are really telling the story of how bills like the one Derek Van Orden voted for have impacted people's lives and win back voters who may have lost trust in us, our candidates, and help make sure that we're able to restore some sanity to the state in this country in 2026.
We are talking to new state Democratic Party Chair Devin Remicker about an event taking place in La Crosse tonight, a town hall, about the Trump budget reconciliation bill and the damage it's going to be doing in Wisconsin. And I hate to bring people down further, Devin, but I mean, this was one shoe. It was a budget reconciliation bill, and they're already moving into next year's fiscal 2026 budget bill. It probably won't be done in time by October 1st the way it's supposed to be, but we do know that already the Trump administration and Republicans, they're looking to make even more cuts in next year's fiscal budget bill.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, they will stop at nothing to pick the pocket of the working class in this country. And I mean, that's what this is really about. It is about, you know, finding every way to squeeze profit and wealth out of what used to be public goods and public services provided to people and put it in the pockets of billionaires. And I mean, I don't think that they're going to stop. I mean, I just saw yesterday it reported that the Winklevoss twins, who sued Mark Zuckerberg after he, worked with them on Facebook in its early aughts, have invested $1 million to try to essentially prop up a Republican candidate for governor here in this state, Bill Berrien. And, you know, to me, I'm just getting flashbacks of our Supreme Court race early this year when another Silicon Valley billionaire tried to buy an election in the state of Wisconsin. But really, this is about control and power so that they can extract wealth from the working class in this state and across this country. And I think people, just like they did with Elon Musk when we overwhelmingly voted for Susan Crawford and rejected that in April, are going to do the same thing next year.
Devin Remicker, the new state party chair, is our guest. And yes, we mentioned that earlier with the Winklevoss twins being the primary supporter of Bill Berrien at this point. And we talked to Josh Shulman, candidate for governor at the Northern Wisconsin State Fair. And he was asked directly by Todd Alba if he needed Donald Trump's endorsement. And he rather skirted past it. And so he did not completely take the Tony Weed view of, you know, tie yourself to Donald Trump as tightly as possible. But I wonder, with the early entries into the governor's race, if you think that Donald Trump's endorsement is going to carry weight or not in this governor's race next year.
I think it absolutely does carry weight. And I think that it's going to be a race to the bottom for these Republican candidates to appease Donald Trump. I mean, you know, Bill Berrien himself is he donated to Nikki Haley in the 2024 presidential primary. So I think he has a lot of making up to do with Donald Trump. But I think that both of them, and along with anyone else who gets in, are going to be competing to show who is most loyal. Not to the state, not to the country, not to the voters, but to Donald Trump. And look, I mean, this is what his agenda is. It's enriching the wealthy at the expense of the working class. And I think that that process of trying to win the primary by winning his favor and supporting him with undying loyalty is going to be ultimately what ends up backfiring on the big time next year.
Devin, is there a streaming option for the for tonight's town hall, or is that just an in-person only affair?
I believe it's in person only.
Okay. All right. I had that question on the text line, so I thank Tiffany in River Falls for putting that in. Devin Remiker, new chair of the Democratic Party of Wisconsin. Devin, thank you for your time. I really appreciate it. Good luck tonight.
Thanks for having me on. Really appreciate it, as always. Take care.
All right. You bet. And coming up next is a local update for some of you. Others will stick around, and we'll talk to James Kelly about the stories he's following here on the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
Tomorrow on the program, we'll talk a bit more about something that was in today's Up North News Daily newsletter. You can sign up for it over at upnorthnewswi.com. We have spoken previously about the efforts by opponents of the Enbridge Line 5 up north to call attention to things by trying to break the world record for the world's largest display of origami fish to show the widespread opposition to Line 5. Well, the Sierra Club now says they have done it. They have had more than 70,000 origami fish that have been turned in to break that world record and call attention to Line 5. So that's in today's newsletter. Sign up over on the website. And we'll talk more about it tomorrow as well. Parker and James, I don't think you heard the door knocking or the doorbell during the interview, but home ownership ain't nothing like it, man. When they come to do the water softener, you know, they don't know you're doing a live radio show. So
you don't anything have a can sign? Happen on live radio.
Yep, yep.
But you need an on-air sign right above your front door.
That you're right. You're right. It needs an on-air sign. Yeah, call more attention to it so I can get the doorbell rung more often. But James, you mentioned that's, you know, one of the things about renting. You don't have to worry about that. Although PJ writes in on YouTube, renting equals giving your money to a landlord to live off of. He says, home ownership is an investment into yourself with your own money. I have more money in my pockets ever since I stopped giving landlords my money to live off of. That is true by and large. I have no regrets about this purchase, you know, 30 years ago this summer. But I will say this, and you could say it here, but I was quoted when we moved to the Cayman Islands for a time and we looked at ownership versus renting. And they said, you got to rent because if you own when the hurricane comes, it's your landlord's problem. If you own and the hurricane comes, it's your problem. So I get that we don't have hurricanes here, but it was a very interesting illustration of renting versus owning. And James, until you find that forever home, you just rent away, buddy.
Yeah, I'll keep doing that. And, you know, it is better to own your home, but also at the same time, you're not thinking about that when you're shoveling your driveway out at 6 a.m. in January.
Yeah, I know. Now, I do know one of our good neighbors, he did do what PJ's advising, and he bought a house when he was like in college, you know, just started making the payments on it and figured it was like a party house. He's now turned it into his family house. He found a wife. He had kids. Now they're grown and gone. And it's been fun watching this house kind of go from party house to family house to retiree house.
Yeah.
And he did start with a very young investment, but
it's a good return.
It is. All right. I'm totally off track because the water softener guy just threw me off here. So let's start with what James is covering for us for Civic Media out of the Chippewa Falls newsroom. And it's something that we're going to be talking to Senator Jeff Smith about more tomorrow, and that is the missing funding for homeless veteran services in this new state budget, James.
Yeah, so there was originally requested $1.9 million for the Veteran Housing and Recovery Program, which operates three of these veteran housing shelters across the state. Without that funding, it was removed by the Joint Finance Committee. Two of them are closing. That's one in Chippewa Falls and one in Green Bay. It's Klein Hall in Chippewa Falls. It's right across the river from downtown. I went out there yesterday, talked to a bunch of people. It's a pretty quiet neighborhood. It's pretty secluded. Some neighbors said, you know, this is actually, you know, a great spot here. We're happy this is here. People walk their dogs up and down this little side road along the river. Like, it's great. I spoke to about a half dozen people, and they're certainly unhappy with the latest news there.
Yeah, without a doubt. And again, we'll wait and see if there's some kind of follow-up bill, and we'll talk to Senator Smith about that tomorrow. This next story is, while it's from Northwest Wisconsin, it could apply just about anywhere. We do not hear much about bear attacks here because you simply don't have that happening with black bears as much as you would with, you know, grizzly or polar. But that did indeed happen here in Northwest Wisconsin a few days back.
Yeah, so we got an update yesterday that the 69-year-old woman who was attacked is recovering and in stable condition in the hospital, so that is some good news. The bad news is the DNR has not actually located this bear yet, and they also noted that it was acting unusually aggressively. There's the old saying, you know, if it's brown, lay down, if it's black, fight back, if it's white, good night. Yeah, that's I'm terrified of bears. So this is about the worst story that I could have come across this week. But they're still working on trapping the bear. They actually trapped the wrong bear at first. They trapped a male. They're looking for a female bear, still looking for it and plan to euthanize it if they do come across it and kind of see, was it infected with rabies? Was it infected with some other illness? What caused it to act in such an aggressive manner that's so atypical?
And I saw from WEAU this morning that an officer, I think a sheriff's deputy, did shoot and wound the bear when it was up in a tree, but then it managed to get away. But, you know, for all we know, it has maybe succumbed to its wounds. But whatever the case may be, they really want to find this bear and,
looking for the cub.
Yes, and the cub as well, which probably prompted this in some way, shape, or form. There's something called the Good Trouble Lives protests that are going on tomorrow. What's that about?
Yeah, it's just another one of these nationwide protests that are being organized by this 50-51 group. There's going to be one in Eau Claire and Chippewa Falls tomorrow at noon at the University of Wisconsin-Eau Claire and at the Peace Circle in Chippewa Falls at 4. There's other protests all across the Northwest Wisconsin region, Ladysmith, Amory, Spooner, Hayward, Menominee, Superior, and Ashland. So I would imagine if somebody in the Northwest Wisconsin region wanted to go to one of these events, they wouldn't have to travel more than an hour to get there. There's plenty of them.
All right. And then finally, quickly, there's a Riverfest celebration in Hudson to do some cleaning up.
Yeah, it's an annual event that they do out there to just kind of, you know, get the environmental conservation energy going. On Tuesday, they're going to be cleaning up near Hudson and North Hudson. And then for the rest of the week, there's kind of just little events. There's an informational session on Wednesday on the St. Croix watershed. And there's going to be a concert on Thursday, a paddling event on Friday, and a Native American celebration on Saturday, and a whole bunch more. It's just a good way to get people out and protecting their natural environment.
Perfect. James Kelly from our Chippewa Falls newsroom. Thank you, James. Have a great day.
Have a good one.
All right. And thanks to all of you for being here. My thanks to Parker Olson, Brittany Merlot. Today's guests, Melissa Kay, Representative Christian Phelps, Earl Ingram, Melissa Baldoff, Devin Remaker, Jimmy Koska, James Kelly, and all of you for being here as well. I'm Pat Kreitlow, founding editor for Up North News, the Wisconsin outlet for Courier, a pro-democracy newsroom. Coming up next, Matt Nair on Air, live from Oshkosh. Enjoy the rest of your Wednesday. We'll see you back here up north tomorrow morning, bright and early, 6 a.m.
The national news cycle never stops, but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.